Hello there. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, concerns grow over a rise in anti-Semitism in the United States.
The fifth wave of bomb threats targeting Jewish community.
President Trump prepares for his first official address before Congress. This as lawmakers continue to look into Russia's interference in the presidential campaign.
If this investigation is to be thorough and objective and to add value, it has to be done in a bipartisan fashion.
Also ahead, a musical icon's son produces a tribute to his dad's 90th birthday. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, as President Donald Trump prepares for his first address to the U.S. Congress, the White House is fending off the latest calls for an independent probe of Russian efforts to impact last year's U.S. election and any ties between Moscow and the president's inner circle. The chair of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee says he's seen no evidence of improper contacts. Republican Congressman Devin Nunes telling reporters Monday that he has no plans to expand an investigation that's already underway.
Look, if there's at some point we have serious crimes that have been committed, it would be something that we would consider. But at this point, we don't have that. The only serious crimes we have are leaks that have come out of our government to the press and others.
But the top Democrat on the intelligence panel, Congressman Adam Schiff, later said there have been no conclusions on the matter at this point.
And we have yet to receive any testimony from the FBI on the investigation of potential links between the Trump campaign and Russia. So we're not in a position to reach any conclusions about that.
Lawmakers are looking into U.S. intelligence findings that Russia meddled in the U.S. election in an effort to help Mr. Trump defeat Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, the president will speak to Congress later this evening. VOA's Michael Bowman reports from the U.S. Capitol.
Republican Senator John Thune says he hopes President Trump charts a way forward on health care reform. But he told VOA that international matters also merit attention.
The more he can affirm our strong commitment to our transatlantic alliances, NATO in particular, I think that would be very welcome news to a lot of our European allies and to our, you know, our military all over the world, too.
Democrat Chris Van Hollen agrees.
He needs to make it clear that the United States stands up for human rights around the world, that we will support our allies, that we will not be collaborators with the Russians.
Trump's speech comes one day after the White House proposed a significant boost in U.S. military spending. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
President Trump called Monday for a $54 billion annual increase in defense spending, describing the 10% jump as a landmark event, a message aimed at assuring the world of, quote, American strength, security, and resolve.
I have to say, when I was young in high school and college, everybody used to say, we never lost a war. We never lost a war. You remember. Some of you are right there with me, and you remember, we never lost a war. America never lost. And now, we never win a war. We never win. And we don't fight to win. We don't fight to win. So we either got to win or don't fight it at all.
Speaking to U.S. governors at the White House, Trump said he would outline his spending priorities in greater detail in an address to Congress later this evening.
This budget will be a public safety and national security budget, very much based on those two, with plenty of other things, but very strong. And it will include a historic increase in defense spending to rebuild the depleted military of the United States of America at a time we most need it.
Budget officials told reporters that with the big jump in defense spending, there'd be corresponding cuts in domestic programs and foreign aid to other countries. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. U.S. drone in Syria takes out al-Qaeda's deputy leader. Rising tensions loom as the U.S. Asian powers discuss North Korea. The Pentagon sends a Trump plan to defeat Islamic State, other extremist groups. U.S. appeals court is rejecting the Trump request to put the travel ban case on hold. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Jewish organizations across the United States are on high alert as vandals struck yet another cemetery. This time, up to 100 tombstones in Philadelphia were overturned or broken. Jewish community centers and schools in at least 11 U.S. states also reported bomb threats Monday. Joining me to talk about these developments, Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. Thank you for being with us. What exactly is happening here?
We had the fifth wave of bomb threats targeting Jewish community, the fifth wave of threats since the start of the year. Now, stepping back, we at the ADL, who have been focused on fighting anti-Semitism for over 100 years, were concerned about the rise of anti-Semitism over the past 18 months. It seemed to track to the political campaign after the, and I think that was in part because of the introduction of anti-Semitic imagery and language into the political conversation, a phenomenon that we spoke out against repeatedly. After the election, we have seen a surge of hate crimes. These have been crimes, much like the hateful rhetoric of the campaign, that weren't only focused on the Jewish community. You've seen people targeted because of their national origin, because of their faith, because of their race. But in particular, the spike in hate crimes after the election targeted the Jewish community. Vandalism, assault, and now again, since January the 1st, bomb threat to Jewish community centers, day schools, and offices, including those of the ADL.
Have authorities found any of the perpetrators of either the threats or the people that have desecrated these cemeteries?
As far as I know, these are ongoing investigations. We do not know the identity of the perpetrators. We do not know whether they are related. We do not have information that gives us much solace at a time when the community has an increasing level of anxiety because of...
You mentioned the campaign. You haven't mentioned the president. He said he has a Jewish daughter. He has a Jewish grandchildren. He made a statement saying that this was disgusting. Is he doing enough?
We welcomed the statement of the president last week. We thought his words were important. We've also been really heartened and grateful for the fact that Vice President Pence visited the Nazi extermination camp at Dachau last week. On his first overseas trip, that Vice President Pence went to the cemetery in St. Louis and alongside Governor Greitens participated in the cleanup, and that Vice President Pence was at an event in Las Vegas on Friday night where, again, he delivered for the third time in more than a week a strong and clear message against anti-Semitism. However, it took Mr. Trump far too long to speak out forcefully. The image of him shouting down an Orthodox Jewish reporter in the East Room is one that caused white supremacists and neo-Nazis to celebrate, and the failure to speak out sooner has created a vacuum, I believe, that really emboldened the anti-Semites and allowed their bigotry to really move from the margins into the mainstream. Now, as I said a minute ago, it's great that he spoke out, but now we need to move beyond words, and we need a plan of action, because a few phrases bolted onto the end of the speech is not going to daunt the anti-Semites and the racists. They need to know that there's a full force of the federal government is prepared to weigh in against their intolerance and hate.
What would you like the president to say at this point?
Well, again, it's not about what he says, I think, in as much as it's about what he does. In his remarks before Congress could be a perfect opportunity for him to lay out a series of steps. We'd like to see the Department of Justice launch a fully resourced civil rights investigation into these crimes, because these are hate crimes. They're targeting our community because of our faith, and therefore they should be treated as such. Number two, we'd like to see the president call for an interagency task force on fighting anti-Semitism and hate crimes more generally. You know, the Obama administration had launched something similar, but President Trump should, and I hope will, take it much farther. Number three, we'd like to see the FBI, which I already said is doing great work to investigate these cases, ensure that state and local law enforcement is trained up in how to detect and deal with hate crime. Number four, we'd like to see the Department of Education elevate anti-bias and anti-hate content in schools, because you can't really arrest your way out of hate. You got to change hearts and minds. And I think in this case, the best model, the best preventive medicine would be the kind of education programs that are proven to work at mitigating intolerance. And then finally, number five, we'd like to see the Department of Homeland Security clarify and confirm that its program on countering violent extremism, which was rumored to be reclassified as solely focusing on Islamic extremism, will continue to encompass other threats, including but not limited to white supremacists, because we've seen this alt-right and we've seen this extreme ideology take hold, and I think it's something we really need to work out of the mainstream back into the shadows where it belongs.
All right. Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. And this stuff is not just here in the United States. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is warning that many of the achievements made in stabilizing the world order since the end of the World War II are now at risk of being lost by growing populism. Antonio Guterres, attending his first session of the UN Human Rights Council as UN Secretary General, also expressing alarm at what he sees as a spreading disregard for human rights around the world.
We are increasingly seeing the perverse phenomenon of populism and extremism feeding off each other in a frenzy of growing racism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim hatred, and other forms of intolerance. Minorities, indigenous communities, and others face discriminations and abuse across the world. And the same applies to members of the LGBTI community.
Guterres warns violations of human rights are early and leading indicators of crisis. He says root causes of conflict must be tackled. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, whether you're a seasoned business traveler or just somebody looking to get away for a few days, hitting the road can often have its share of inconveniences, but there are ways to ease those tensions. Reporter Chris Morris joins us now for some ideas from his latest article on Forbes.com.
There are a lot of ways that hitting the road kind of hits you back. You know, there's overcrowded planes, you've got traffic nightmares, if you're driving somewhere, there are add-on fees, spotty hotel online Wi-Fi. So you need a few things to kind of help yourself out so you get rid of some of that stress while you're on the road, whether it's for work or play. Now, if you're taking off, probably the best thing if you've got a long plane ride is have an Amazon Kindle. It's very nice to actually literally turn the page and get that feel. But if you're reading a 600-page hardback, that's a heavy thing to carry with you on a plane. There are a few options. There is a cheap Kindle. I wouldn't suggest that one. Instead, I'd go with either the $120 Kindle Paperwhite or the $200 Voyager. Now, both of them have good on-screen resolution, but they have a backlight so you can read it in the dark. The Voyager also adapts to the light around you, so you have that perfect backlight and will not hurt your eyes or cause any eye strain. It also will automatically let you flip the page without sort of swiping if you're that kind of lazy.
What about someone who already just has an iPad? Will books work on those?
You know, books work on the iPad. The problem is the iPad has that glossy screen. It's fantastic for movies or games or if you're typing up a document. And if you are, the iPad Pro is probably the best one out there. But if you're reading, those lights and that glare really gets annoying real fast. What the Kindle has going for it is a screen that uses what's called e-ink. And as a result, you can read outside and not have to squint or fight the sun.
Oh, that makes a big difference for sure. What other goodies should we be thinking about taking along?
You know, there are a couple things that are just smart to always have with you. One of them is a backup for your phone, a battery that you carry with you. The Mophie Power Station runs about $50. It has two USB ports, so you and a companion can both recharge at the same time. Carries two or more charges with it. Really, really handy. But with airline fees like they are today, you probably want to carry a digital luggage scale. There's one from a company called eTech City that is probably one of the better ones. It only costs about $8.50. And what it does is it attaches to your suitcase's handle. You lift the luggage in the air, it'll show the weight on an LED screen. And that gives you time to either transfer items or go to UPS or FedEx and just mail them home, which is actually a lot cheaper than some of the add-on fees.
What happens if you're unlucky and you're stuck in a hotel room on a rainy day and there's really nothing to do?
Well, you know, the problem with being stuck in a hotel room, besides being stuck in a hotel room, is what I would suggest is carry a Google Chromecast, a little stick, about $35 to $59, depending on the model, and that can plug into the HDMI port on your TV set in your room. Now, what's different about this, as opposed to an Amazon streaming stick or something from Roku, is all the programming goes through your phone or your tablet, and you kind of cast it over to that. So you don't have to depend on the hotel's Wi-Fi, which sometimes will block services like that. It's a cheap way to do it. You have Netflix at your fingertips. You have Hulu, HBO Go. There are a lot of options that you'll be able to enjoy.
All right, reporter Chris Morris. You can check out more ideas from his article at Forbes.com. Well, Sunday was a big night for actress Viola Davis, who won an Oscar in the category for Best Supporting Actress. Her win also highlights Hollywood's growing interest in complex minority characters. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I got a life, too. Don't you think I had dreams and hopes?
In Fences, Viola Davis plays Rose, the introspective wife who stands by her man, aware of his imperfections. She perseveres next to him, not with deference, but with dignity.
I told him if he wasn't a mankind, then move out the way so the mankind could find me.
She's the balancing act between her explosive husband and her brooding son, and when her philandering husband, played by Denzel Washington, brings home a baby, she accepts it not because she has to, but because she chooses to. This is not the first time Davis fleshes out complex roles, but her Oscar win underscores the movie industry's new trend to create three-dimensional African-American characters. Another example is Mahershala Ali's awarded performance as Juan, a drug dealer in a poor Miami neighborhood, in the indie drama Moonlight. Juan finds himself taking care of a boy abandoned by his own mother, a drug addict. In this role, Mahershala Ali is both criminal and nurturer.
You're in the middle of the world.
I don't think it's an issue of there's more films representing black experience in America. I think it's great films that represent a black experience that are being pushed to the fore finally and being recognized.
Giovanna Chesler is director of the film school at George Mason University. She says this recognition was years in the making.
Audiences were starving for stories like that, but David Oyelowo and Ava DuVernay laid the groundwork for this moment.
Filmmaker Ava DuVernay, who made the film drama Selma 3 years ago, and David Oyelowo, who starred as Martin Luther King Jr., did not win accolades then, but their work has passed into the annals of great acting and movie making.
We're not asking, we're demanding. Give us the vote!
And action!
Now, DuVernay, who also directed the acclaimed documentary 13th about incarceration in America, has been tapped by Disney Studios to direct a big-budget fantasy drama.
I go out of here every morning, I bust my butt, because I like you.
And then there is Oscar winner Denzel Washington. A class of his own, he has for years been part of Hollywood's mainstream, but still tries to push the envelope with contentious characters and projects. He directed and adapted August Wilson's theater play, Fences, for the big screen, and portrays Rose's conflicted husband, Troy.
Who is Troy?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
He doesn't know. You know, he's working it out. I mean, that's why it's a great drama, because there's drama. Because all the questions aren't answered when the curtain goes up.
And who hasn't loved the film hit Hidden Figures, the heartwarming drama about three African-American women who helped NASA in the 60s send the first American into space and then on the moon?
We're just on our way to work at NASA, sir.
I had no idea they hired.
There are quite a few women working in the space program.
The movie has won the hearts and minds of fans, a reminder that audiences crave stories with non-formulaic characters in unconventional situations. When these characters and stories win, we all do, because such narratives become the catalyst of equality in popular culture. Penelope Hulu, VOA News, Washington.
Don't you know that we're able? All right, well, international American musician and civil rights activist Harry Belafonte is turning 90 years old March 1st. In honor of his legacy, an anthology has been released featuring a reimagined version of his song Island in the Sun. It's sung by a multicultural children's choir with the goal of introducing kids to Mr. Belafonte's music and the concept of diversity. Joining me now to talk more about it and hear a bit of the song is Harry's son, David Belafonte, executive producer of the song. So thanks for being with us. And how did this song and this idea come about?
There was a lot of discussion with a number of entities about ways to celebrate and acknowledge Harry's 90th birthday. And I was approached by Sony with their wish to look at a compilation and a re-release of some of his catalog. And there was an idea to do some new recordings of Harry specifically singing with kids and doing some new material. And it was all very talked about and nice. But at the end of the day, there were a couple of things that were a simple reality. One, Harry is retired, doesn't sing or perform anymore, number one. And number two, Harry traditionally never has been, and particularly now, is not one who is ever a fan of being celebrated for the sake of being celebrated. So it was a pretty quick redirection of the idea that if there was to be anything done on behalf of Harry for his 90th birthday, we should at least find something that has some meat on the bone, for lack of a better term, and find something that was historically in keeping with what moves Harry and has traditionally motivated him. We agreed that the best way to celebrate this legacy would be to bring this wide reaching body of work into the consciousness of a whole new constituency of children and try to find the right way to do that. The material was picked by Harry. At the top of that, we chose Island in the Sun in particular to be reimagined and re-recorded by children, to be performed for children.
This is our island in the sun, a world that belongs to
the hopes that it will hopefully wind up in the ears of and on the tongues of children nationwide and hopefully worldwide to make the case that the concept of racism is simply something that one is not born with. There is absolutely no precondition or human gene that predisposes someone to not like someone because of the color of their skin. And if you look at all of Harry's passions and causes over his lifetime, I think none sits at the forefront like the attention to racial inequality. Clearly, you look at his role in the civil rights movement, it supports that case. So we picked that mission, and we recorded a version of Island in the Sun with reworked lyrics done in a contemporary, very upbeat way to spearhead this song to open the door to children.
How does Harry feel about the way it turned out? Is he happy with it?
The extent to which Harry is happy, I certainly would hasten to say yes.
Well, what do you mean by that?
You know, many people are amazed when one thing succeeds. You know, oh my God, we did such a great job. Harry is often the one who is not cynical about it, but always feels there is always more that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's about not being appreciative or not being happy about the way something turned out or pleased, but aspire to do more, because it is usually just a drop in the bucket of an ocean of stuff that ultimately needs to be done.
What would you say your father's overall musical legacy is?
The overall musical legacy? Well, if you have followed the story and the evolution of his career, much that shaped his path was circumstantial. How he wound up becoming a singer, the influences that shaped the choices he made, moments in history. So I would say his musical legacy is really a look at the diversity of so many things in the world that are beautiful and so many things in the world that are problematic at the same time. You look at music that is heart moving in the emotional sense. When you look at the number of ballads that he performed, when you look at songs from the protest and civil rights and space. So there is great diversity that I think just showcased so much that his legacy is the fact that there is a lot out there, you know, a lot out there that is to be learned and understood and accepted and not feared, with underneath each song significant meaning, I think, within the content.
Oh, I lay in the sun, willed to be by my Father's hand. All our days we will sing and pray. When colors come together, united we stand.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and European Union continue to share similar goals to promote peace and prosperity through freedom, democracy, and the rule of law. And to those objectives, said Vice President Mike Pence on a trip to Brussels, we will remain committed. The United States and EU economies are the world's largest, accounting for half of the world's economic output. Transatlantic commerce and travel for business and tourism support 14 million jobs on both continents and improve the lives and well-being of all of our citizens. We reaffirm our commitment to free, fair, and flourishing economies that undergird our success and to cooperate in achieving that, said Vice President Pence. When it comes to terrorism, said the Vice President, we must be strong and we must be united in our efforts to confront threats to Europe's security and stability. This will require greater coordination and intelligence sharing among EU member states and between the EU and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. In addition to confronting terrorism together, clearly we must stand strong in defense of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of nations in Europe. In the wake of Russian efforts to redraw international borders by force, we will continue to support efforts in Poland and the Baltic states through NATO's Enhanced Forward Presence Initiative, said the Vice President. And with regard to Ukraine, the United States will continue to hold Russia accountable and demand that Russia honor the Minsk agreements, beginning by de-escalating the violence in eastern Ukraine. At the same time, the United States will search for new common ground with Russia, which President Trump believes can be found. The United States' commitment to the EU is steadfast and enduring. We are separated by an ocean, said Vice President Pence, but we are joined by a common commitment to freedom, to democracy, and to the rule of law, and we're confident that that bond will endure and grow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4 hours.